This is the Education Exchange with Paul Peterson. I am the senior editor at Education Next. Thank you for joining us. Tax credit scholarships are among the most popular of school choice programs. Education Next polling shows support for these scholarships running over 60% year after year. Over 20 states have enacted some type of a tax credit scholarship program. States that have enacted this legislation include New Hampshire, Florida, Arizona, Ohio, Indiana, Iowa, and many other states. So these scholarships are popular at the state level because they, well, in part because they save taxpayer money. Each state has its own specially designed tax credit program, but basically it works this way. Those who donate to the scholarships receive a full rebate on their taxes. So it doesn't cost the taxpayer a thing to make this charitable donation. And the state loses money, of course, because when you take a deduction from your taxes, the state doesn't get your money. But the state gains back in savings on school expenditures if a scholarship recipient leaves the public school for a private school and pays for it with this tax credit program. State aid is usually larger than the amount that is given out in the fellowship program. Now, a bill has been proposed in Congress that would do the same thing nationwide at the national level, and it's gaining traction, at least from the Republican side of the aisle. And I have with me today on the Education Exchange, John Schilling, senior advisor to a nonprofit organization entitled Invest in Education. He's past president of the American Federation of Children, which mobilized support for tax credits at the state level. So now he's taking it to a new level, and I'm very pleased to have John Schilling with me on the Education Exchange today. Thank you, John, for joining me.
Thanks so much, Paul. Great to be with you.
So, John, why is your organization supporting a federal tax credit program? And maybe you can clarify exactly what this is. What's your main objective?
Well, so our main objective is to complement the great work being done in the states and to bring education freedom and school choice to states where entrenched political opposition prevents it from taking place. And one of the things that you mentioned, Paul, was you referred to this as a program. And here is where I'm going to correct you. This is a federal opportunity. It is not a federal program. The Educational Choice for Children Act is a $10 billion federal scholarship tax credit, which, as you pointed out in your opening, it will work a lot like similar programs that exist in 21 states. Corporate and individual donors contribute to nonprofit scholarship granting organizations, and the donors would get a 100% non-refundable federal tax credit. This bill, we anticipate this bill could help parents of up to 2 million kids around the country access the school or the education service that best meets their needs, chosen by their parents. And the students will be able to use the scholarships for tuition, tutoring to address learning loss, special needs services, education technology, among other uses.
If your child is going to a public school, can you get the tax credit scholarship?
You could get a federal tax credit scholarship. And I would note that this is particularly important to policymakers in rural areas because their, you know, rural legislators will often say to us, well, hey, you know, I'm for school choice, but, you know, the nearest private school, you know, is 200 miles away. So
you can use it to do what? Can you use it to get a tutor in the home, or can you use it to download material, curricular materials from the internet, or exactly what can you use it for in addition to private school tuition?
Just for the things that you just said. So if you are a student and you sadly are suffering from learning loss as a result of the pandemic, you can use a scholarship to go get yourself some private tutoring to help address that learning loss. If you are a special needs student and you need additional services, you could use this scholarship for special needs services. If you're out in a rural area and you need education technology, you would be able to use the scholarship for that. So it'll be the scholarship granting organizations that will be able to determine, you know, what they will be able to use it for.
Yeah, in rural areas, transportation is a big issue. So is this something, can you use this to help get your child to school?
No. Now, you do have to sort of limit the things that it can be used for. And I think adding transportation, to that portfolio would be mighty challenging.
One of the controversies that have come up in this space has been some people have tried to use this scholarship at the state level or something like this to take, like I did this summer. I took my grandchildren down the Danube, and boy, was it educational. Now, can I pay for that trip down the Danube? I mean, only their fare, not mine, just their fare. Can I use that?
No, Paul, I do not believe that you'd be able to use the scholarship to take the kids down, grandkids down the Danube.
All right. So, okay. So there are limits as to what it can be used for, but who will make the donation?
So corporate and individual donors. So as a corporate donor, you can contribute up to 5% of your taxable income to the nonprofit scholarship granting organization. If you are an individual, you can contribute up to 10% of adjusted gross income to the scholarship granting organization.
Well, that adds up to a lot of money. If everybody's going to take this tax credit off their taxes, you're going to have a lot of money. But you said it was only 10 billion. How do you put a limit on this?
So it's capped at 10 billion. And look, having worked on these tax credit scholarship programs at the state level for a long time, if we actually got to 10 billion, if we raised 10 billion, that would be a good problem to have. And one of the things that our bill does is if we get to 90% of that 10 billion, there's an automatic escalator and that amount would go up 5%. So we want to make sure that we're building in for growth. And look, I mean, 10 billion, as I said, I mean, we think that 10 billion would help, the parents of up to 2 million kids around the country. Now think about that for a moment. So right now, in all of the private school choice programs in America, we're probably around 700,000 that are currently benefiting. Now we've passed a lot of universal choice programs in the last couple of years, so that number is going to go up. So let's say it goes up, 100,000, 200,000 kids or so. We pass this, we're nearly tripling that, which I think would be. I think that would have a tremendous benefit in expanding education freedom around the country and getting help to a lot more kids and families who need it.
Okay, so this sounds great, but now I've got two grandchildren who go to a private school. It's a Catholic school in the Boston area. They switched over to the Catholic school because the public school shut down during COVID, and they said, we want to go to a school that's open. And they
Yes,
love it
good
at this
choice.
school. And I love the fact that they're at these schools. And so now, can my son donate money to this program and then use that to help get a little reduction in the cost of because it's pretty expensive. So can he get some help by donating money to this program?
So, like state tax credit scholarship programs, you could not donate to a scholarship granting organization and have that designated to your own child. So, when you donate to a scholarship granting organization, the scholarship granting organization must award scholarships to more than one student, and they must for the students to go to more than one school. So you have to have it's important to not be able to designate this to your own child. Now you would be able to do that in a sense if it were a refundable tax credit. So for example, the state of Oklahoma recently passed a universal refundable tax credit. So those families would be able to designate it for their own kid. They can get that refundable tax credit for their own kid. But you can't do that under this federal opportunity.
So now, is this limited to certain kinds of students? Do you have to be in this need of a special education, or do you need to be of low income in order to be eligible to receive a scholarship?
The only eligibility requirement for a student is a student has to be in a family where the threshold is 300% of median income by area. So let me explain that. 300% of median income by area was written into the bill by design to reflect the different cost of living in different parts of the country. So if you're living in Cambridge, that's one cost of living. If you're living in Omaha, that's a very different cost of living. So 300% of median income by area would basically capture 85 to 90% of the K-12 population in every state. So it is not a universal bill, but it is a near universal bill. Because if you're going to capture 85 to 90% of the K-12 population, you're going to be capturing most of the kids.
Well, so now let's say somebody sets up a program like this to benefit the schools in the Boston area, say the Catholic schools in the Boston area. Could my son apply for a scholarship, even though his children are already going to private school? So if you're already in a private school, are you still eligible to apply for this?
Sure, as long as you're, within that threshold of 300% of median income by area.
Not in that 300, he's escaped that. So
Well,
too bad for him.
too
But
bad for him.
anybody who's below that, they
Yeah,
can.
look, so in the Boston area, we fully anticipate there will be scholarship granting organizations that will form. To serve Catholic schools in the Boston area and throughout Massachusetts, as well as other faith-based schools. And as long as the scholarship granting organization, is issuing scholarships to families that are going to go to more than one school, then they'll be able to participate. And
Someone
look,
to object to this as a violation of the U.S. Constitution, a violation of church and state, that this is really providing money to religious schools, and that's really not acceptable under the First Amendment.
well, Paul, as you know, the left has been making that argument for some time, and they are wrong. The Supreme Court has ruled that they are wrong. So, that ship has sailed for the left.
Well, perhaps. I know that there have been a lot of statements, but the Zelman case, which was the sort of case in point here, which is a decision by the Supreme Court in 2002, said this was, in this case, constitutional because it was focused on the children in Cleveland public schools who were low income, and the public schools of Cleveland were terrible. So there were some limitations on just. It had to have an educational purpose. It couldn't have a religious purpose. So, but this is a pretty broad program. So, are you convinced that the Zelman case would apply in this
Oh,
context?
100%. And, in addition to the Zelman case, there was the Arizona school tuition case that the Supreme Court also heard that ruled in our favor. We've also had Espinoza and Trinity Lutheran. So I think the Supreme Court, I think, has made it very clear over the years that this is an allowable use. And look, as you know, Paul, those of us that have been in the school choice movement for a long time, and you and I have been in the school choice movement long enough to remember when this was really a support group rather than a movement. We hope that the court will eventually get rid of the Blaine amendments, which are blatantly anti-Catholic amendments that were passed in the 19th century. Court hasn't quite gone all that way yet. We'd love for them to do that.
Yeah, so how much support does this legislation have in Congress right now, John?
Tremendous support. And, I do, one of the things that I always try to do is remind people about the history of the tax credit in Congress. The very first tax credit scholarship bill was introduced back in 2013, but it really got traction during the Trump administration, thanks to Secretary DeVos, because this really ended up being her policy idea. And we got very close, in the fall of 2020 to actually getting this done. Didn't quite make it over the finish line, but she deserves a lot of credit for laying the groundwork for this. But where we are today, we now have really tremendous momentum. Our bill has 148 co-sponsors in the House. That's two-thirds of the House Republican Conference, and we've got 30 co-sponsors in the Senate, which is more than 60% of the Republican Conference in the Senate. This is the most support for any school choice bill ever. In addition to that, we have built a nationwide coalition of national and state groups, more than 130 of them, who are behind this bill. This has never been done before. So I feel very good about where we are in terms of support. And look, as you know, part of the reason that we have had success in the states, as much success in the states as we've had over the last few years, And the reason why we have so much support in the Congress now is coming out of the pandemic. All of a sudden, you had a lot of policymakers. The light bulb went on for them because their own kids could not get a proper education during the pandemic. So they thought, well, maybe there's something to this school choice thing.
At the federal level, there's a couple of problems. At the state level, you can argue to the legislature you're going to save money by enacting this legislation because the amount you put out in state aid is going to go down if the students are not already in private school. Now, in the case of the federal government doesn't usually give that much money to education. It only gives 10% of the total amount in education. Yes, we have Title I, but that is restricted to low-income students. And we do have special education, but there's really, the amount that's coming from the federal government is so much less than what's coming out of the state and local budgets that, this program is actually, I don't think you can make the same argument that the federal government's going to save money by enacting this legislation. Is that a problem?
No, that's not a problem. And I want to be very clear. This is not federal money. Okay. These scholarships are going to be funded by the individual and corporate contributions to the scholarship granting organizations. Now, the donors are going to get a 100% refundable tax credit. And as you noted about state tax credit scholarship programs, that does mean money comes out of the treasury. But at the end of the day, one of our arguments, particularly with conservative policymakers who are very concerned about spending, is look, this federal tax credit does not require any new federal money. It just doesn't.
Well, it does affect the deficit, the federal deficit. And conservatives on Capitol Hill are concerned about the deficit. And anything you don't get in taxes adds to the deficit. So it's true, formally speaking, it's a tax credit program, it's not an expenditure program, but it does affect the deficit level of the United States government.
It does. And what that will mean is, I think what you will probably have to see is an offset. And we are totally comfortable finding an offset for that. I don't know that there, look, for me as a conservative, I look at the federal budget and I see a lot of areas could be trimmed a little bit. Never an easy thing to do. But nonetheless, if an offset is required, we would support that.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in the education bill out there besides the Title I program and the special ed program, which are going to be very hard to touch. But there's a lot of little programs out there that are really sort of questionable. So yes, there's probably some money to be found there if you can get that through the legislative meat grinder, but it is not going to be all that simple. The other problem that I think this bill has at the federal level are rural Republicans. Rural Republicans have generally been the last ones to come on board on the Republican side of the aisle simply because their local schools are sort of community institutions. The football team, the basketball team, we're just going through March Madness now. Just think of the level of enthusiasm for the local school as the local public school as an institution. So, isn't a lot? It's pretty. It's not so difficult for people to put pressure on rural legislators to hold back from these kinds of undertakings. Is that a problem for you?
It's been a problem for as long as I've been working in the school choice movement. But I really think, Paul, that this is beginning to change. It's beginning to change because of what we went through in the pandemic, when a lot of schools closed. It's beginning to change because we are demonstrating that the public in these rural areas, we're not talking about the district superintendents or the school board members, but the public is very supportive of school choice. And what we say to members in rural districts, and rural members have asked me this question directly, well, how does this benefit my schools, right? And what I say to them is because there is a variety of uses for this scholarship bill, right? You can use it for private school tuition, you can use it for tutoring, special needs services, education technology, and that assuages a lot of the concerns. My friend Corey DeAngelis has also done some work on this, where they've done some research into rural areas where they've proven that school choice actually is pretty popular in rural areas. So I think that the wall there is starting to come down a little bit. I'm sure you're familiar with what's happening in Texas, and how hard the governor and his team and other groups like AFC have been working in Texas to try to get this over the finish line. And our problem has been rural legislators. But they're coming around. They're coming around.
Well, I agree. There is movement there, but it's not going to be an easy task. So the other issue that comes up is it's hard to imagine this making it all the way through two houses of Congress and signed by the president without bipartisan support. I mean, I'm going to assume now that that Donald Trump wins this election. I'm going to assume the Republicans win the Senate. I'm just going to assume they win the House. They've got total control of the government by this time next year. I'm just going to assume that. I don't know if that's going to happen. That's just a total assumption. But even if that were to happen, I don't see you being able to pass this without some support from the Democratic side of the aisle. Do you see any hint that this legislation could get support from the blue side of the political spectrum?
Possible, but not probable. But I do think if, in fact, your scenario ends up turning out to be what happens, I think we could pass this in budget reconciliation. If the Republicans have the White House and both houses of Congress, you can do this in a reconciliation bill that does not require 60 votes in the Senate. And I think that is the most likely path for passage. If your scenario is changes a little bit, where perhaps Republicans only have one house of Congress, then it does become important, to try to find a few Democrats that may be willing to support this. Now, interestingly, we have some Democrat House members who, when they were state legislators, they voted for tax credit scholarship programs as state legislators. And so those are the folks who we would go to first and say, hey, look, this is no different than what you tried to do at the state level. How about coming aboard? So we will certainly make every effort to try and reach them.
Do any members of the on the Democratic side of the aisle send their own children to private school?
Oh, many. Probably a few in the Massachusetts delegation as well.
So are they potential supporters?
They could be. The difference between the federal and the state level is, we've had some success at the state level, getting Democrats to come aboard. At the federal level, the power of the national teachers unions is pretty big, and it's very difficult to get House and Senate Democrats to step out in front of that freight train. And some will do it occasionally. Joe Lieberman is a perfect example of this. He has always been a supporter of school choice. He was a leader on the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program for many years. And he was a guy who was willing to step out and before this because it was the right thing to do. So we're hopeful there's a few more out there.
Well, John, you are a very strong advocate for a very interesting idea out there. And I am looking forward to seeing how this conversation moves forward during the coming year and beyond. So thank you for joining me on the Education Exchange.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
I have been speaking with John Schilling. He's the senior advisor to Invest in Education and former president of the American Federation for Children. I am Paul Peterson. This is the Education Exchange. Please join me for a new Education Exchange podcast released on the EducationX website every Monday at noon Eastern Time.